Okay. Hello, everyone. Ostensibly, this is, well, first of all, this is Dave Weiner, and ostensibly, this is my podcast, but it's a kind of a new birth of my podcast. So this is more or less Jeff Jarvis and myself, and we're going to be talking about whatever we talk about. So, Jeff, you want to say hello?
Hello there. I've invaded Dave's turf. I feel like I'm here as part of podcasting history with the master and the originator.
Let's
Good to
not do
see you, my
that.
friend.
Let's not do that. How about we're friends and we've known each other for God, at least 20, 25 years or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I started blogging in 2001.
Okay. Well, that's 23 years.
Almost. Yeah.
Well, those were very early days. And in fact, that is kind of what I want to talk about with you today is that, well, first of all, you posted something. I think I can never remember which servers you're posting on. And by the
I
way,
am promiscuous. It's interesting.
ambipostulous.
I want to support Mastodon. I post on my blog. I post on Medium. I also post on Twitter. I'm not going to call it X, and Blue Sky, which I like, and I hope it becomes really open source, and Threads because people I know are there. So basically, yes, I'm everywhere.
Yeah, I'm exactly in those same places. And also add to that Facebook. I am very
Right.
much, I love Facebook. I like to say that Facebook is a lot of different things. It includes all the people, all the content on it, all the threads that are ongoing, and that's what I love about it. I don't really care for the company that much. But anyway, you posted something that you quoted Heather Cox Richardson. Is that right? Did I get her name right?
Exactly right. Heather
No.
Cox Richardson, who writes the extremely popular
Yeah. No, I
Substack
subscribe.
about
I
history.
subscribe, and in these times, she's an incredibly invaluable person to read. And she said something that I have been trying to say specifically to you for months now, that it's forget about it. We're pissing in the wind, Jeff. It's not.
Should I read it? I have it in front of me. I printed it out for this.
Please.
So she said the reaction, this is on Facebook, she said it. The reaction of news pundits to Thursday's debate, air quotes around debate, has made it clear that we must get the facts of this election out ourselves. To me, she says, the commentary after the debate has been a huge wake-up call about the media. It's clearly in crisis and something new is emerging. Pretty sure whatever comes from this moment will be bottom-up media rather than the current corporate model. But that, of course, depends on there being a free press after January 20, 2025. And that means making sure people understand what is really at stake in this election.
She's
So,
such a
yes, that
trip.
speaks to exactly what you have been teaching us about
Oh
for
man,
many
and
years.
it's like such a loop back in so many
Yeah.
ways. I mean, I want to just briefly tell you a story. I was at Dean headquarters on the night of the Dean scream. I had been there for a few days before that, and the thing that made the Dean campaign so unique in history is that it was entirely built on the blog. They were not getting any love from the journalists. They all thought he had no chance, and his whole campaign became, if you, I'm sure you remember, it was a huge phenomenon. It was all about the blog,
Yep.
And so I had to go there and see what was going on. I was living in Cambridge at the time, and so it was relatively close. And I met Nico Melle, and he and I became friends as a result of that. He was the lead, I don't know if he was the lead blogger actually. I think that might there was someone else who was the lead blogger, but he was the guy. I showed up in the office and he sort of took me aside and said, I'm gonna be your special friend, and he gave me the keys to the blog. He gave me the password.
Oh.
Yes, and I was not a Dean supporter. I wasn't against Dean, but I wasn't a supporter. And so I at first blogged very timidly from there. But then the night of the Iowa caucus came and I started posting the news. There was a lot of news coming on. And I felt this was where we had our disconnect. This is where the Dean campaign had switched gears and become very conservative. Up until that point, they had been, balls to the wall. I don't know if I can say it. It's my podcast, right? And they just were trying things out. I've since become friends with Joe Trippi, and it was like, what did they have to lose? But at that point, they acted very conservatively, and that is the corner turn for the Democratic Party. They never have had a campaign since then that embraced the, I don't know how to put it, but Obama certainly.
The conversation with the public through direct means.
And
Yeah.
respect for the public and being part
Yeah.
of the public, right? I mean,
Yeah.
we're all Americans, right? Isn't it self-government? That's what we do here, right? But no, I mean, They didn't want to talk about it. When the Dean scream actually happened, they didn't want, we had audio in-house that showed what it sounded like from the audience. And of course the journalists were just running the audio that made it sound like he was a crazy man. And that, you know, it, you couldn't have a more clear example.
Well, you know, hold on a second there. So did you try, you wanted to share that audio?
Yeah, fuck yes. Of course I did.
Yeah,
I
said, they were too cautious. Why? What rationale did they give for not doing
no rationale. They just deleted the post, Jeff.
Somebody they didn't want to talk about it. Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, this is how it works in corporations. And we've got a corporate Democratic Party. And along comes Donald Trump, and he embraces our technology far better than the Democrats ever have. The Democrats are always more than a generation behind. They won't even adopt the principles of the previous generations. So I think that, to go back to what Heather Cox Richardson said, I think that more specifically, we have to pick up the responsibility, the things that the campaign is not doing. I think that's how you define it. You say, okay, if we were running the Biden campaign, and by the way, I just want to say, I would vote for Biden if he were dead.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't make a difference.
As somebody said, if it were a brain in a jar.
Yeah, I would totally. And they don't get that. And the Washington Post now, I think you posted this.
Say, yeah,
they're
after him too.
Thing that says, well, you know, people are supporting him, but will they vote for him when he dies? And I figured they must have done the poll and found out there was no breakage in support. So they're fighting. You know, I don't know what they're. You see, you ask, what? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing this, Jeff? But who the fuck cares why they're doing it? It doesn't matter why they're doing it. They're doing it.
I know. The thing I have to grapple with, and I've taken too long to come to this, is that, you know, you and I meet in the same place as it comes out. But you and I have talked about this. And by the way, I quote you at length in my next book, The Web We Weave, coming out in October.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
From a conversation that we had. And
okay. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, we talked about how we come to the same place from very different angles, right? You came as a technologist and I came as a journalist.
Right.
And each of our fields has issues.
Oh, God, yes.
Right. but it's been, you know, mine is more of a church, right? People think it's worshipful.
Yeah.
And it has taken me, and I'm far more.
You're not that, Jeff. You're
my
not
field very, than many others are.
You're not a worshiper, Jeff.
I'm not, but it took me time even to get as far as I got to say that I've got to abandon so much of my field because so much of it is broken. And it hurts to say, but it's necessary honesty, I think.
But it'll be so much fun on the other side of it.
Well, you know, somebody just asked me, Michael Zimbalist, who has had a lot of positions. He was in charge of digital innovation at the Times, and he did all kinds of other things. He just tweeted to me kind of, well, you know, what are we going to do? And I said, well, on one of the socials, I said, well, I'm about to talk to Dave Weiner about this. And the truth is, what I want to go back to is some version of what we had years ago in blogging. And I don't want to make that to sound nostalgic. I want it to sound architectural.
Well, we gave something up and now we can have it back.
Exactly. Exactly. And we can go into minor details about, I think the blogging required for a lot of people, a sense of more commitment than they wanted. Mastodon requires more effort. Twitter required too little. Those are all details. It's a matter of the architecture of public discourse, and to enable people to be able to talk and have conversations is what society has been at. I'm sorry, I'm going to plug my books again. In my other book that's out now, The Gutenberg Parenthesis, I argue that what print took from us over 500 years was this sense of society as conversation. And we're relearning how to hold that conversation right now. And blogging was the first best tool we found to recapture that.
Well, I don't think blogging was about conversation though. And I think that was a big wrong turn that we took.
Don't you think the link, I always thought that the link is what enabled that. And what I respected most in blogging is if you wrote about something I wrote, and you linked to me, and I wrote back, and I linked to you, so that people could. We were in conversation, and people could.
I like that because that's arm's length, and they're sharing the flow, and it cuts down.
Exactly.
And it cuts down on the spam. See, the thing is that I have found. I ran a discussion group on scripting.com, that was, you know, it was very, very early. It was where the blogosphere formed out of, was out of that discussion group. If you look at the archives of it, these were all the early bloggers before they were blogging. And that was a very positive thing that happened there. But it became a place where people came to spam and abuse. And it's almost mathematical that happens. Whenever flow shows up in some place, the spammers immediately show. And, you know, it took me a long time to understand how that worked on Twitter, because I was always puzzled when people would reply to something that I posted there with something that was really obvious, you know. And I wondered, why do they think I don't know that, you know? And so at one point I picked a guy out and I said, I'm just curious, why do you think that I don't know that? He said, oh, I'm sure you do. So then why did you reply to me with that? Well, I just wanted to talk to the people that were reading you.
Right.
And I get it. Well, Jeff, that's spam. That's the definition of spam, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, it is. It's piggybacking on you for distribution. And that was the question.
That's correct. And it's also the way abuse enters this system.
Yeah, you're right.
And so Mastodon has, and by the way, the technology of Mastodon is so complicated and expensive because it tries to provide full bandwidth, every which way you can imagine it, conversation. But yet at the same time, they create the need for moderation and abuse control and all this shit. So why are we going so far out of our way to enable something that then we have to control?
Let me ask you this, Dave.
This is the big bug in what we're doing. So when you talk about people posting something and linking to somebody else, that I'm totally in favor of. That's very respectful, you know? That's saying, you know, like, for example, somebody trashed me without in a blog post. This was like reminiscent of the old days, you know. I got a, you know, he trashed me in his blog post without naming me or linking to the thing that I wrote. And I go, my God, how unprofessional is that? He doesn't respect his readers enough to tell him who he's even talking about, you know.
Right. So let me try two things on you here, Dave.
Sure.
One is on this point. I think that what I always respected most is when somebody had their own blog and wanted to respond to something I had said, positive or negative, and they used their own space to do it.
Yes.
Rather than a comment in my space, which judge how you will, but the fact that they used their space, which is precious to them, to say something and to say it to their people and to involve me in it, that to me was the highest order.
Absolutely. And you know what's even better about it? You get the choice as to whether or not you want to pass it on.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It guarantees, Jeff, that they're going to be respectful to you, because you know damn well you're not going to send it. If they call you names and shit, you're definitely not
no. People would no, it's still, they could still.
Oh, you listen. Might. We might, if it was done in a skillful way, pass it on, even if they were calling us.
Right.
We're not thin-skinned here, right?
But here's the other thing. Here's the second question. So I believe in the value of the link. I remember one of the values of our early blog days was also the blog role, where you were a great proponent of that. And it was a way to say,
actually,
here's people I read. Here's people I may not agree with, but here's people, you know, that I read, and you should know who I read. Well, now I get crap all the time because I criticize the New York Times greatly. I think the New York Times is broken. It's highly disappointing to me. But I still, as a media critic, I still link to them. When I criticize them, and then people get mad at me, especially on Mastodon, is interesting. That's where it happens most. Don't link to them. Don't link to them. Well, no. A, I'm a critic, so I got to read them. B, I've got to give the respect to my readers to say they can judge for themselves. The link, damn it, is not an RT, is not an endorsement. So there are times when, yes, I'll just do a screenshot of a headline because I'm so angry at the Times, but I still think the link is a matter of respect. Do you still think that?
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah. It's not respect for them. It's respect for your reader.
Exactly.
It's like you're saying, I get, you know, I'm, and my rule for linking to something is if an informed person would want to know about this, that's the rule for linking. And
even if it were bad, even if you're linking to it because you disagree with it.
Of course. Absolutely. Right. Because I get some of my best ideas by reading things that initially I disagree with. Sometimes I change my mind too, you know? So the fact that I disagree with it isn't a particular indictment of it, you know? It's that I disagree with it, it's a fact. It doesn't matter, it's a valid point of view. A lot of people have it, we ought to consider it, you know? Our goal is to work with each other. That, you see, that is the thing that we've really lost, is Amen. That the networks that we have been using, Twitter primarily, Facebook, maybe to a lesser extent, but Twitter is the one that forms our culture, Jeff, the one that you and I are in. Even though, and I'm still, of course, I'm on Twitter. It's like people would say that it's dead. They're wrong. It's not dead. It's the biggest one out there still.
And it's under attack, and I think we need to still fight for it, and there are communities there that matter.
Well, that's the
And
point. You see, it's not just Elon Musk. People look at these things, they think that Facebook's just Zuckerberg, but it's not. It's all the rest of the things it is.
right, you can't, the way I put it is that you can't see the trees for the forest.
Yeah,
Right? It's the
that's right.
opposite. Is you got to recognize that it's not the company you're talking to, it's the people there.
And
Last January, I held
you don't have to
a
convince everybody, you don't have to convince anybody actually, but the thing that we miss right now, first, and the thing is, I'd like you, my dream for you, okay, to the extent that, why do I even have a dream for you? But I do, is that you'll stop seeing yourself as a media critic and start thinking of yourself as something other than that, because this media is not worth criticizing. It's not worth wasting your time on. They just did something that was as heinous as January 6th. The place was the air was filled, it was filled with toxins. After everybody was completely out of their minds after seeing the debate. I was, everybody was. What did they do? They lit the frickin' match.
Yeah.
And that is, you may say, well, they have a right to do it. Yes, I guess they do have a right to do it, but why do you have to do it? What are you trying to do? I mean, I asked that question. What is exactly they're trying to do? Are they trying to not elect Trump? In which case, they're going about the wrong way. And but yet their whole business about saying that Biden has to leave, it reveals a conflict they say they don't have, which is the only reason to say that is because you don't want Trump elected, right? But you've always been claiming that isn't what governs what the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post, et cetera, et cetera. So which is it, New York Times? Do you want Trump or not want Trump? Or do you give a shit? It looks to me like you give a shit. In which case, if you do, we ought to put our heads together and figure out what you ought to be doing to help us make the right choice.
I don't think they give a shit for
No.
that. I
Well,
think people come to all the time and
no,
say,
but we see we're doing right now what I don't want to do.
I know we're using them as the basis of the
No, we're
conversation.
saying why they do it. But the point is, it's not answerable. When you break up with a girlfriend or a wife or a significant other, you waste a shitload of time trying to figure out what they're doing right now and why did they do it? And don't I just want to love them? It's, you know what? It's pointless. You don't know. And that's what's happening here. We're both lifetime readers of the New York Times. I grew up with it on the kitchen table in my house in Queens. It was the only newspaper it was the only thing we had in common in my family was the New York Times. I'm
Yeah.
not kidding. I grew up in a pretty screwed up house, but we were all total New York Times junkies. And so it's very hard to say goodbye to them. I have not canceled my subscription. I don't plan to.
Same here.
Right. I mean, not that, because it doesn't make a difference anyway. They don't give a shit. Why would they care?
I understand the anger. I understand the desire to send a signal and do something.
No, I want to do worse. I want to undermine them. I want to take
Yeah.
them out. I want to take them out of the conversation. I don't want to do it by exposing them. I want to do it by providing the service they refuse to provide.
So do you know Ken Doctor well, right?
No, who's
Okay,
Ken?
so Ken Doctor for you and for your fans is he wrote Newsonomics, which was a analysis of news economics for many, many years. He's a respected analyst. And Ken finally decided, he's a little bit older than both of us, to put his money where his mouth is. And he picked Santa Cruz, California, and decided to start a digital-only news outlet called Outlook Santa Cruz. And his avowed purpose, he
Is
says it out
what?
loud, is to kill the paper that's owned by the hedge fund Alden Global Management in Santa
Awesome.
Cruz.
I would like to help him if I could.
Yeah, you should. He's Ken's great. And Ken raised a lot of money to do this, and I don't know that you need quite as much money as he did, but nonetheless, he has an association of six others in the country doing the same thing. He's about to do it again in Oregon. And this is saying the quiet part out loud where the Times is broken, the Post is broken, CNN is broken. The hedge funds have broken all the newspapers. Sinclair is joining in with Murdoch to ruin the democracy. Old big media needs to be rejected now in favor of a new bottom up Heather Cox Richardson media. And you, Dave, are quite right that you have the model and basis of that in what you've devoted so much of your career to, which would generally be known as blogging. citizens speaking on their own, in their own spaces, with under their own power, with their own freedoms.
Yeah.
Now we need to figure out.
Sources go direct.
Right. We need to figure out some other things around that.
That's the basic idea.
But yeah.
Yeah.
People speaking. And does that mean when this is part of what I argue in the Gutenberg parenthesis. This is why I argue that conversation matters to society. Are there jerks who are talking? Yes, of course there are. Are there people who are wrong? Yes. Are there people who lie? Yes. Ever been the case since print. But with print, we developed new institutions to try to manage quality. They were called editing and publishing. And they worked pretty well for 500 years, but they're not up to the scale of speech today. They're too limiting. We need either reinvented or new institutions to give us things like finding out who knows what they're talking about and looking up facts for us and joining in reporting projects together. And there's things we can do together. It's not all about independent lone people just saying what they think on blogs. It's also about collaboration, right?
Oh, it's that without collaboration, you're not doing anything at all.
Right.
It's working together. It's getting out of the mindset that it matters who says something. Rather, what matters is how good are the ideas? You know, I mean, there's so many examples of this. You know, the life that I've lived is that I got sort of written off at a certain point, you know, and when Twitter in 2006, when Twitter took over from many of the things that I created, not all of them, I mean, podcasting's doing fine, you know, but the general consensus in tech and media was that I had lost, that I was a loser and that I was dead. They were talking, the word they used about RSS was dead. And that was, I noticed the people who were saying it were people who don't like me. And so it's been very hard to get anybody to listen to me at all because of that thing. But I never became stupid the way they think that I'm stupid, you know, and I've never wanted anything other than to get out from under this mess that we've been in. I've had a better view of what journalism has done to us, I think, than a lot of people have. You know, it's like been cyclic in the tech industry that they ignore the important things as they're happening and they focus all the energy on billionaires and on failed products and failed companies. And meanwhile, the things that are flowering, you know, New York Times never wrote a big piece about RSS when it was happening, that, hey, this is something that's interesting. Even though you might argue that it was in their own self-interest to do it, given that the New York Times was the key reason it took off. You know, I mean, the thing was that the reporters at the New York Times never wanted it to happen. In fact, they were against it. But I take that back. That's not entirely true. They liked it for themselves. They used it themselves, but they didn't get behind it as sort of a way, I don't know how to put it. They were against it and for it. This is the same thing they were with the internet, when the web came along. They just, or the Macintosh, that was the most amazing thing, is that they wrote the Macintosh off in 1993, 94. They were saying the Macintosh was dead when the Macintosh was going through a rebirth because of the internet, because right. It was the perfect machine for the web. And they never apologized for that, but they really destroyed a lot of really good things by that. They have so much power, Jeff. The thing
you suffered, I think, one of the traits of media, which is its faddishness. It wants what's new. If it's not new, it's not news. And at some point, you look savvy if you declare something over, because I'm on to the next thing, and not understanding the ongoing value of things and what people invest in them.
Yeah,
which is odd for an institution that's been around for 500 years.
Yeah, they also like billionaires, by the way, FYI.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
they like that success until it's too much success.
It's only been very recently that they've decided that they should be opposed to billionaires. They discovered that there were things that weren't perfect about Facebook. All those things, by the way, were totally discoverable as early as 2011. You know, the things that they excoriated Facebook for, they were cheering for them with that stuff a few years ago, a few years before that. They didn't bother to find out what they were cheering. I was a little surprised. What was the name of that company that the Facebook scandal with? Oh, geez.
Cambridge Analytica?
Yes, Cambridge Analytica, exactly. I was surprised to see that they were so upset about that because everybody was doing that. The APIs encourage you to do stuff like it. They were promoting things called the Open Graph. You know, that's what the Open Graph does. It gives you access to information about the users who give you consent to see their information. That's all it was. They weren't doing anything that wasn't completely appropriate, that hadn't been blessed by journalism. And yet they're such hypocrites. It's like you can't even tell them that they're wrong. You know what I'm saying, Jeff? There's no redress for them. There's
Well,
no,
okay.
they don't have anybody critic. You're a media critic, Jeff, but you don't get any space on the op-ed page of the New
Oh,
York Times,
God, no.
do you?
God, no. Well, so let me, I'm gonna praise you here. So
No, I
you
don't want to do that.
no, wait, you're gonna have to let
Let's
me do
talk
it. I'm
about
gonna,
how we're going to do this.
I'm, well, I'm getting, that's where I'm going. That's where I'm going.
Okay,
I want to
good.
go to a
All right.
lesson you taught me, and you've, I've told this story in front of you many times. So you know probably what I'm gonna tell,
I
but
don't have any idea.
it was seminal to me, not only in blogging and media, but also in my views of journalism. And I think it helped lead me to start a program in engagement journalism. It led me to rethink how I teach journalism and see of journalism, all around listening. And the moment was, and you'll know as soon as I say it, that we were at the first BloggerCon in Cambridge that you organized, and I have been assigned a panel on politics
No,
and
it
blogging.
wasn't a panel. That was the key thing.
Well, wait, Dave,
Oh,
don't
sorry.
kill my
Okay, you're right. I
punchline
get
here,
it. I see
man.
where you're going. I get it.
Don't kill my
I'm
punchline.
sorry. Okay. You shouldn't tell me this story when
I
I have a
said
mic.
to
It's not.
Dave Weiner in the hallway something about worse, my panel on blogging and politics. And Dave looked at me in that inimitable way, which you could, and you said, "It's not your panel.
Fuck
You know
no.
what? It's not a panel. Room is the panel." And that
Oh,
lesson
see,
has
I tell
stuck
that.
with me ever since.
Me too. I'm raising my hand. I tell that story too. It's like,
Yeah.
and because I'll tell you why I tell the story is because you turned into a natural born discussion leader, which is why would that be a surprise? You know, it's like, it's not a surprise. You're a professor, and professors made
Now,
extreme.
professors lecture more than listen.
Well, but the
You
really
know,
good.
and so that wasn't, that's why I'm saying it was such an important, and journalists write their narratives more than listen. That was
That's
about
right.
listening to the and respecting
It's
the
not
wisdom in the room.
reporting either, is it? I mean, the thing is that reporters really don't have a very glamorous job. They're doing a lot. If they do it right, they're just reporting what other people have discovered, not what they've discovered. And they've lost the tune, completely lost it, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So
So I
from that
okay.
basis,
I have a
where do
proposal
we
for you,
go?
okay? Let's try to imagine, and that we don't have to solve this right now, okay? But here's the thinking, the puzzle. We just have to try to imagine what would the Biden blog look like if it existed. And I'm not talking about some compromise blog, something that, well, we could get them to do this. They're not even doing it, Jeff, okay? This is the ideal situation, and I'm thinking we're going to do it for them, okay? And it's not going to be incredibly partisan. It's going to show incredible respect for the readers. It's going to be the kind of thing that the Trump followers, the ones that aren't crazy people, that they're going to want to tune into because we're basically providing information for voters. Yes, we do prefer Biden, but the whole idea here is we're providing the information resource we wish we had. It doesn't seem very complicated to me. You know, it's a matter of selecting, is doing a lot of reading, okay, and selecting the stories that meet the criteria that you and I both agree on for linking, which is if it's something an informed person would want to know, then it's worth a link. And I think that is, see, the problem is we can't do what Ken Doctor is doing in Santa Cruz because
Right.
that's a long-term project. We have a bigger problem. We've got whatever, 90 days or 180 days or something before there's an election. We have to win that election. And we have to make certain things have to happen. Oh, I just got a warning that we're running out of time, which is fine because I think we're reaching. I have to click. Excuse me. They want me to upgrade. Oh, interesting. I have a.
Yeah, I pay for it since through
Yeah,
the
well, it's too bad I started it. So we may get cut off. I think we may get cut off, which is fine. It's, you know, my philosophy for podcasting is come as you are. You know what I'm
Well,
saying?
it's what you also said too, is the people who should be here are here. The podcast lasts as long as it should last, huh?
Pretty much. As long as they let you keep going, right? Oh, I have 9 minutes and 23 seconds left. So we're totally cool. We're very good. So, in other words, let's call Nico, all right, and see what he's doing. Nico, the guy, my friend who did the Dean blog. Let's call Joe Trippi and talk to him about this idea. I don't know, whoever else.
Mika Sifri, who does the stuff,
Let's
and
call Heather Cox Richardson. She's actually quite accessible, you know.
really.
Yes. If you have something you want to say to her, say it. She'll respond. She's re remarkable. I made her
So
my
this thing
moderating
that she
year 2 years.
posted was part of a thing on Facebook that I didn't fully understand as people who follow her. She's kind of distributing cards.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what that means, but I think she's struggling to find another medium to share bottom
We
up.
have to work with her, okay? When somebody pops their head up with an invitation like that, okay, it's time to get on the freaking phone and not be intrusive, not be whatever, but enthusiastically say, this is what we are capable of doing, and we really want to work with you. We also ought to look for getting, if you want to do this, Jeff, I want to do, I picked you, okay? Sorry, you don't mind, but I thought,
Drafted.
well, I really, I don't know why, but I did. We ought to get some endorsements too, so that when we go, so maybe people have, something to make the wind power our sails a little bit more. So people might, but the goal isn't to be, for us to be heard. It's for us to be able to present other people's ideas you know what I'm saying? It's like, it doesn't have to be this overwhelmingly huge project. It just has to start a thread. It's like, how did podcasting started? Well, it started because one person did it, but then other people stole the idea and thought it was a good idea and went with it. And then once you had 20 or 30 podcasts running, it was all done. Nothing more needed to be done. It was rolling. Same idea here. It just needs to become a thing, and it has to be possible to organize it. We also have to have marches too, by the way, FYI. We cannot all be sitting on our butts. We have to get out and walk. I tell you why, because the journalists will never cover anything related to Biden until we put something up for them to cover.
Yeah.
It's
I mean,
our fault.
but here's the thing, Dave. So I said this just out of frustration the other day that we should get together and protest at the New York Times. And people
Yeah.
properly said, don't bother, don't waste your breath, don't do
Who
that.
said that?
I forget who did. It was somebody on Twitter.
So what? Somebody on Twitter said. That's like a cartoon. I have to correct this guy on the internet.
Because the New York Times is never going to cover it. They're not going to notice. They're not going to care. They're just going to say, of course, there's the
Oh,
stupid
but you bet the
masks.
New York Post would cover it if 100,000
Yeah,
people
but I won't
were
be used by
outside.
those
Come on,
jerks.
CNN, and eventually the New York Times would have to cover it. But it doesn't matter that the New York Times covers it. It doesn't even matter if anybody else does. It matters that we see it.
So
That
I just
we're
looked up
there.
what this Heather Cox Richardson thing is, live before your very eyes. And it's kind of bloggy a little bit.
Of course it is.
It's cards. That are about the what's at stake and facts
Yeah.
in a short format with a QR code so
Oh,
you can get more.
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Jeff, why don't we like just publicize the hell out of that thing?
Exactly. I'm going to send it to you right now. So let me give you the URL, folks. It is bigwin2024.com.
That's very close to what I was thinking. It's like I came away from the disaster at the debate realizing that what would have made it go a lot better for me. First of all, I thought that Biden, that it really was incredibly simple. All Biden had to do was learn his lines and just say certain things over and over and over and over again, and almost ignore Trump because, let him, we can all see what he's doing. But just remind people. I mean, I made this list. It's got like, I don't know, 15 things on it. And these are the reasons I'm voting for Joe Biden. And it's like, and if I'd had that on my iPad while I'm trying to watch the freaking debate, I would have relaxed a lot because I'd said, okay, well, and then basically we need to somehow get through to Biden that his job is to say these things over and over again. He also might want to start telling people about what Trump did with the stolen documents.
Yeah.
that, you know, we've never heard what he did with it. We only have our imaginations to go with that.
Right. So one strategy, and it's Jay Rosen's, is to cover the stakes, not the odds.
Yeah. No,
And
Jay.
so getting across to people what the stakes are, and part of getting across what the stakes are is policy. The other part is character, is what bad things Trump has done, which the Supreme Court now is basically going to give him a
People
free
can figure
passport.
it. Just like, let's put the fear of God in there. He sold our secrets to Russia. That's the obvious. That's the
And he's
obvious.
going to get away with it.
Well, he has so far.
And he's going to continue to, thanks to the Supreme Court today.
That's the kind of thing that once you learn, if you or I were leaking American secrets to the Russians, we wouldn't be out walking around,
Right.
Right? We would probably be on life. Ex We'd be on Guantanamo Bay.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so the question we should be marching for is, why the fuck isn't, excuse me, I should stop doing this. I actually might think I might get kicked off Apple Podcasts if I keep doing that.
I know.
But yeah, but why is he still walking around? You know, these are the questions that we should be asking, not like, when is Biden going to leave? Crying out loud.
It's just offensive. It's just stupid. But we don't even get into that. All right, you got 3 minutes
Listen,
left here.
we've
What are
accomplished
the assignments?
a ton here. Well, we'll write them down. Okay, I'll take some notes.
Okay.
And anybody, would just say to anybody who's listening, if you think that these are good ideas, I don't know, post something to us if you want to on, well, what were they? Threads, Twitter, Blue Sky. What else is there?
This Heather Cox Richards thing is kind of brilliant. So she has an introvert's guide to distributing these physical cards. Just leave them in a grocery store, leave them in a bookstore,
What a
right?
brilliant idea.
The extrovert's guide is you go up to people and at a party and you hand them out, right? But it's blogging. It's giving your message to people. It's having something to
It's
say.
even better, man. It's like, it's because it's physical, because there's a physical presence, there's a love element to it that isn't
Yeah.
present when you do
Yeah.
it in writing. That's sort of like whatever. It's not really personal, but if I hand it to you, I have a button that I wear. It's a Martin Luther King button. It's just got a picture of Martin Luther King on it. And I carry a bunch of them in my pocket, you know? And when I go out to places, I'm wearing them. I get compliments on it all the time. And I have a bunch of them. I just give them one. I say, now, I'm going to give it to you, but you have to wear it. Okay. And that would be the kind of thing. It would, if I were black, I would find that very reassuring, you know, that here's a white guy wearing a button that says basically Black Lives Matter. I mean, that's how I interpret that. It's saying, look, he's our leader. And yeah, I did notice that he's black. But anyway, Jeff, time flies, man.
But it's always an honor to talk to you. I mean that. You've been an inspiration to me in all kinds of
I
ways.
don't
I know you
want
don't
to be
like this kind
any.
of praise, but I'm going to do it anyway. And
Yeah.
I've learned a lot from you,
But
and I'm
let's
honored to be
learn
able to have
new
these
stuff together.
conversations.
Let's learn new stuff. I don't care
Yeah.
about the past. Let's do new stuff, man.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Jeff. Bye.